Welcome to Volume 1, Episode 2 of Vermont Movement News. This episode will give reports back on the 4th of July protest against ICE in Bristol, Vermont, and a brief report back from the alt-right so-called Defend Free Speech rally in Washington, D.C. We were fantastically lucky to get an interview with researcher Gwen Snyder, who has apparently been targeted by the Proud Boys in retaliation for her research. Finally, we will have a discussion with Medic Mom regarding the alt-light Proud Boy rally in D.C. with footage from the event. The opinions of people interviewed on Vermont Movement News are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Vermont Movement News. First up is the report back and discussion of the 4th of July protest in Bristol, Vermont. Hey, how are you?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Great.
So before we get started, let me explain what I want. I'm basically asking for a report back on the demonstration on the 4th of July regarding ICE that you did in Bristol.
Yep.
And what, who, what, when, where, why, and how on, about the protests and what do you think this protest accomplished? Were there opposition? Basically, why don't you say your piece and tell me what you think happened and what you how it worked out.
Okay. So I guess if I start at the beginning. So like 2 weeks ago, I posted something on Facebook that to the effect of why is nothing happening. There didn't seem to be, this was before the Lights for Liberty vigils had really been announced, and it just seemed like nothing, there were, the groups that I expected to be organizing didn't seem to be organizing. And so I just sort of messaged a bunch of friends and was like, can we do something? Who wants to just do something? And there were enough of us who did that we had a meeting. That was a Friday, and we at one point we were like, well, do we just like drive to the ICE facility in Williston tomorrow and picket it? And we decided that actually planning something was a better idea. So we pulled together a meeting. There were probably 20 of us. You know, it went through people's different networks, so there were a bunch of people I didn't know. I got in touch with the Women's March, with Migrant Justice, and the Peace and Justice Center in Burlington. And we had a representative from Migrant Justice, actually a farm worker and an interpreter there for the first meeting, and someone calling in from the Women's March, and then like 20 people from sort of the Middlebury, the greater Middlebury community.
What organization from Middlebury?
There was this Middlebury Surge, this Showing Up for Racial Justice was in group. I'm a member of the NAACP. I'm on the board of the NAACP in Rutland, although the NAACP couldn't like officially sponsor it as an event, but, you know, supported it in general. There was, I think those were the only sort of like extant groups. So it was very ad hoc. So we spent a while brainstorming, decided to go with this 4th of July parade because the timing seemed like it was such 4th of July. It seemed like just like a good moment to take advantage of. So we applied under the aegis of Middlebury Surge, and we had one more meeting last Monday to sort of work out details of what exactly we were going to do and to make signs. And then we just all showed up yesterday. So there were about 20 people at each meeting. We had about 50 people at the event itself on the 4th of July, which was a combination of people who had been at those two planning meetings and then also knew a whole bunch of other people who had heard about it through some friend of a friend. We didn't do a big social media outreach effort because we didn't want to, we weren't sure exactly what the reception was going to be, I guess, and didn't want to give any counter protest too much time to organize itself. Yeah, so there, we weren't sure how the parade organizers were going to feel about it. It turns out, I mean, so the reception was overwhelmingly positive, I would say.
Excellent. Was there any opposition whatsoever? Or?
I think there were maybe, I noticed, I think, three individual people who, you know, we had someone who booed and one person who was trying to get a build the wall chant going, which I don't think spread beyond that one person. So I heard someone said there's like 10,000 people at that parade. I don't know if that's an accurate count or not. It's certainly, you know, it's a mile and a half long and pretty packed the whole way through. So I feel like 3 out of however many that was is a pretty good ratio.
Excellent.
Yeah. And there was a lot of, it was really heartening, actually. There was a lot of cheering when we passed by. A lot of people who stood up from their, you know, curb or their seat, and people who, you know, were saying thank you and seemed really glad to see us there.
Is this a continuing effort, or does this end with the protest on the 4th of July?
That's a good question. There is a smaller group talking about going to the Brandon Parade tomorrow, not to march in it, but just sort of to sit there with some signs. And there's talk of meeting again going forward. We had, in our first meeting, people came up with a lot of ideas besides this. So I don't know whether, you know, it doesn't seem like a problem that's going to resolve itself in the near future. So
to make the systemic changes in society, you can't just have a demonstration. It requires right. a long-term exercise of the will. You mm-hmm. basically have to be relentless, what I'm hoping to see more of.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that felt really encouraging about this to me was that it was very organic and sort of democratic. It was like, you know, I think there were 3 of us who did the bulk of the logistical organizing, but mm-hmm. it wasn't like, you know, one of these national networks that says, everybody do this thing on this day now. And that's mm-hmm. also very useful and effective. But I really felt encouraged by the way that people were just willing to step up for this idea that came together in about 10 days, you know, all together from nothing to 50 people stepping out in the parade. And it makes me feel like there may be, you know, it seems like these sort of more organic upswellings of protests seem to be cropping up.
It seems it was one of the big strengths of what you did was that it was not a big social media push. So you're not having a huge number of right-wing people coming out to oppose you.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like people are learning from experience and knowing you cannot expose your plans to your opposition, to your enemy, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we like to think that in Vermont there aren't so many enemies, but it's certainly a mixed state. And, yeah.
My activism, a lot of it is tracking extreme right people.
Mm.
And I see people saying that they need to shoot liberals, shoot Democrats, shoot leftists on Facebook, right out in the open,
yeah.
that are Vermont people.
I mean, yeah.
if you're in a bubble, you can see what you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do opposition research, you sometimes see the darker side of
yeah.
a community.
Yeah. Yeah. I was curious. So there was a clip on Channel 5 News. I don't know if you saw it, but that they came out to record the parade, and I talked to them briefly, and they have my name on the screen. And I was wondering if I was going to, if like some, you know, if I was going to get some mail,
mm-hmm.
which, and so far only one message on Facebook, which isn't bad. Yeah. And I guess you figure if no one's pushing back, you're not pushing hard enough.
If your strategies are such that you don't let them know until it mm-hmm. is too late, you've done well.
Yeah.
You've really done well. If you're organizing, let's keep your opposition know, you might want to rethink some of it, mm-hmm. how you're organizing. I mean, it's good that people are learning to organize off of Facebook, you know?
Yeah. Facebook's such a multi-edged sword in that regard.
So is there anything else you would like to add to this interview?
No, I hope we handed out about 800 flyers that had information about what's happening at the border and where people can donate on one side, and on the other side, information about what's happening here in Vermont with presence of ICE and information about migrant justice.
Yes.
So that was sort of encouraging. People seemed interested in taking those, and hopefully that'll convert some number of people to some kind of action they might not have otherwise taken. I hope that it inspires people to think of ways that they can shake things up a little bit.
Yes.
I think as you were saying, what it's going to take is just that consistent making of noise in every way we can.
Well, not necessarily noise. It requires an exercise of the will.
Mm.
It's when people change society, it isn't necessarily by getting huge numbers of people, but the people who are engaged, they cannot let up. Like if you look at the various civil rights movements, people were unreasonable and they kept pushing and they would not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
And that it's going out and protesting and making noise is one thing, but it requires will.
Yeah.
And I think you did a pretty good job.
Thanks. Yeah.
Are you aware of the Migrant Justice March coming up in August that they want to march across New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder about the efficacy of those actions. And I don't know. I just feel like I guess it depends on how many people take part, maybe.
I was at one of the protests in Williston when people got arrested, and it didn't seem like it was very effective. They sat down in the middle of the road in front of the ICE facility. They didn't touch. They didn't stop the parking lot. They didn't inconvenience people driving by ICE.
Right.
I applaud their bravery, but I think this civil disobedience that's choreographed and it centers the police as the stars of the show, and you have to, this kind of civil disobedience, it's you have to obey the law by taking the arrest. I don't know how good that is as a strategy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, and a lot of what we will be doing in this podcast, we'll be talking about strategy and perhaps questioning some tactics people don't want to see questioned that are comfortable for people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a balance between abstract theory and concrete action. If you just act in a concrete fashion and you don't have a strategy, you're not likely to get anywhere. Likewise, if you have your head in theory and it's just how people think and you're not tying that to a concrete action, that also is unlikely to be effective. It's a balance that needs to be struck. And that's one of the discussions I would like to have here with different people.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Okay. Have a very good night and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for including me.
Sure. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Next up is a discussion with researcher Gwen Snyder. We were very lucky to get an interview. You are Gwen Snyder, yes?
Yes.
Proud Boys showed up on your doorstep to threaten you. Who do you work for? Why are they so angry with you?
I don't do this for work. This is sort of volunteer community service. But they're angry at me because I do research on anti-fascism in Philadelphia, or on fascism in Philadelphia, and especially specifically focusing on Proud Boys in Philly.
What got you doing this?
They had a rally here back in November, and I ended up sort of by accident being in a space where I was close to them and could take a lot of photos. I took them. I ended up doing some IDs and getting pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And got connected to folks who do the work, and they thought I was pretty good at it, and so it's been kind of growing from there.
I saw on your Patreon you need money for mapping software. What do you use, Multigo or something like that?
No, nothing too fancy. I use it's basically a fancy version of a brain mapping software.
Okay.
Yep. So I use that to map relationships.
So what data sources are you mining to do this mapping? Facebook, Twitter, or are you doing other sources?
Primarily Facebook. So sometimes we've got photos that we're able to establish connections from, but primarily Facebook, sometimes Twitter, if they're actively trolling us.
Yeah, they sometimes just come out and tell you who they are if you get them annoyed enough.
Yeah, or they're dumb enough to change the name of the account, but not the actual app name, or they have old photos they forgot about, stuff like that.
Yes. So when did the harassment start?
Well, from the Philly Proud Boys, I'm not sure which account I was first harassed by were them. You know, I got my first sort of I hope you get raped and killed message from somebody. It's almost as soon as I started working on, like the day I started posting the photograph from the November rally. That's actually how I got connected to folks, was trying to find the guy who made that threat. And we did find him.
Who was it?
It was some guy down in, I think it was Alabama. He was really into the Proud Boys and MMA and didn't really seem to be part of anything organized. But, you know, I had their back on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, they got, the first person I identified, or I got help identifying, was Charles Matias, who's a committee person for the Republican Party in Philly. And he did security for them at the fall rally. So
that was the We the People rally?
Yeah.
So I understand Philly Antifa's been helping you out with security.
I haven't actually been home. They've offered. A lot of folks have offered to help with security.
Yeah.
But I've just decided I'm going to hide for a little bit.
Were you at the rally in D.C.? Did you get to that one this weekend?
I've been hoping to, but having to go into hiding kind of derailed that.
How concerned are you about your safety?
As long as they don't know where I am, I feel pretty okay. You know, I'll be at Netroots this week, and I'm a little nervous, but I think as long as I'm staying in crowded spaces, I'll be fine. In the long term, I like don't really have a long-term plan on it, but I'm really hoping this won't be, I don't know what the long-term plan is. I'm a little bit more concerned in the long term because I can't couch surf forever, but.
I've had friends who got 4chan and one that actually had the stormer after them, and they're persistent, but they do seem to be, it's kind of like herpes. They go, it goes away and then they come back periodically.
Yeah. I think they probably got some of their aggression out over the weekend in DC. So it depends on how bored they are and how angry they are and how many of them get fired as we're doing the research and talking about them. We're really doubling down on outing them and being and making sure that stuff gets publicized, because we want it to be very clear that you can't intimidate researchers in silence. And if you try, they're going to double down on you.
Yes. In Vermont, we have these trolls that are getting increasingly, their rhetoric is getting more and more violent. There hasn't been so much of the alt-light going after people, but we have seen the neo-Nazis harass people that they felt were vulnerable, actually, until they had to move.
Yeah, I mean, I think these guys are, the other researchers that they visited the night they visited me, is absolutely sure that they were doing it to planning to jump him. They try to lure him out of his house. Yeah. I think that it really depends on how drunk they are, but if they'd been drunk enough, they wouldn't have thought twice about roughing me up. So
did you smell alcohol? Were they visibly drunk?
Oh, I wasn't there. My neighbor was there. I was actually out of the state.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, you're very brave, and we appreciate your work. Is there a specific direction you're going to be going in the future with this?
I don't know. I'd love to be able to write about this professionally and actually get paid for it. but I'm still figuring out what that would look like.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to the interview?
I think it's important for folks to know that, you know, this is happening. The Philly visits were not the only home visits this week. I'm not going to share other specifics because I don't have permission, but they're doing this all over the country. Proud Boys and also Identity, American Identity, which used to be Identity Europa.
Are they succeeding in intimidating people?
Not that I know of. I think everybody I know of that they try to visit or would probably is doubling down.
Is American Identity working with the Proud Boys, or is this just sort of a cross-fertilization?
I don't think so. I don't think they like each other very much.
Yeah, that was my understanding. But it's interesting that it's happening at the same time.
Well, I think a lot of it is there's increased, with this stuff happening in D.C., there's been increased attention. And so, like, people are seeing more anti-fascist research and threatening more people for it. But yeah, I don't know if it's coordinated. I think it's just a sign that these guys are escalating their tactics and becoming more emboldened and violent and dangerous across the country.
I had a friend who was in D.C., and he is a longtime photographer. He was trying to get all their faces, and even though they had their faces uncovered, they seemed very uncomfortable to be photographed. And there wasn't very many Proud Boys there at the event. How is this a sign that our research and photography and stuff like that is having an effect?
Yeah, I think where we are at right now, I mean, there have been folks who do anti-fascist work who have been doing this kind of research and outing these guys for a long time. I think we're getting, one of the reasons I wanted to do this under my real name was I think people really use an anonymity as an excuse to write off as fascist research.
Yes.
And I didn't want them to give them that excuse. I also said I'd show it wasn't that scary, which isn't paying off very well and dividends that way. But you know, I think we're at a point where Kathy Griffin is retweeting anti-fascist Gordon, you know, like mainstream Democrat celebrities who backed Hillary Clinton are amplifying anti-fascist. And I think that what I'm seeing is people are getting more sophisticated. It used to just be blanket. Someone saw you put up someone's name and employer, and they were just like, oh, you're a doctor. You're just as bad as a Nazi. People are getting a lot more clear that there's a big difference between posting a home address and saying, go rape this person, which is what the fascists do when they're doxing us, and, you know, doing a principal direct action campaign that's call this employer, this, you know, work is a public space. The coworkers deserve to know. And if folks are going to do this stuff publicly, there are going to be consequences. And I think people are getting a little bit more sophisticated about that.
I think, at least up here in Vermont, some of the far right are repeatedly saying that to lock and load, we need to get ready to kill Democrats and liberals and sexual minorities. And there's people saying this again and again and again. I mean, I hate to disabuse anyone of the liberal reputation of Vermont, but that's what we're seeing up here. And when you're threatening a Democrat with, we want to shoot you, it kind of makes the Democrats less willing to condemn people fighting against folks who are threatening them.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I do, yeah. I mean, you watch 8chan and rhetoric has gotten so far into, we need to be ready for a civil war where we're going to kill them all and kill the Democrats. But yeah, like, the mask is slipping a little bit.
Yes.
It's not, oh, these are fringe groups that just want to fight with Antifa. These are heavily armed groups that have or are linked to militias that are very interested in cementing civil war and killing mainstream Democrats.
Yeah, up here there's a Nazi in Bennington who headed up a campaign that actually pushed a black state representative to quit her job. And there's a new state militia, and he's been promoting that, which is frightening.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. They know what they're doing. They're being increased. They've been doing this for a long time, but they feel increasingly emboldened to be open about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really hard for mainstream folks to deny that at this point.
If you're saying that Antifa and Nazis are the same, you're showing who you are at this point.
You really are. And I think folks are starting to pick up on that. And, you know, I mean, one reason I've been very clear that I don't identify as Antifa, but I support them. And I, you know, I'll report stuff to cops and stuff. I share most of their feelings about the police state, but I'm also, I don't have too many scruples about Nazis. But most of my scruples are around racism, and I'm not too concerned about police being racist to Nazis.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I make a point of talking about how materially Antifa has been supportive and does good things, because I think people need to hear it, and they need to hear it from, not from just Antifa, but people who have been helped by or work with or have more firsthand experience of.
Are you willing to talk a little more about the technical side of what you do? Software?
Sure.
And the likes?
I mean, I'm very low tech right now. Again, I'm very new to this. I have ideas for where I want to go, but I don't come out of data science or analytics. So a lot of what I'm doing is a lot more, I majored in sociology in college. I've always been very interested in ethnography, and it's much more sort of ethnographic, qualitative observation with a little bit of tracking relationships in that brain mapping software.
What software do you use, if I may ask?
I don't even remember off the top of my head. I think it's Convio or something. It's not great. Like, you can't really put a lot of data into your little data bubble. I would love a more robust client. Yeah.
Some of the people I have worked with, what they did is they use Elasticsearch and Logstash to ingest data from Facebook, Twitter, 8chan and 4chan to create data clouds that can be analyzed. And it brought some really interesting things up. The Pittsburgh shooter showed up on that software just a little while before he did his crime.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's one thing that people I know have been working on. And it's the problem with it is it's expensive to maintain that type of a software cluster.
I can imagine. Yeah, and the other thing is, in some ways, especially now that I have a larger following on Twitter, I've become a clearinghouse for some folks who are much more skilled and much more experienced than I am. So,
are you able to say who you've worked with, or is that something that needs to be kept confidential?
I don't have permission offhand to say, so I'm not going to. I mean, most of them aren't folks anybody would know. They are folks who want to be anonymous, who don't, not only are not looking for credit, but sometimes are not looking for people to know they exist.
Yes.
Yeah, the folks who put together the PhillyProudBoys.com site, I've worked with some of them, and there's a little bit of my research up there. I wasn't a part of putting together that website, but I definitely know the folks who do, and we've swapped information before.
I'll check out the site.
Yeah, it's really well researched. There's a little bit of new stuff that I contributed, but I mean, part of what's funny is I spent 6 months building some of these dossiers, painfully collecting them, and then it turned out folks for very good reason are careful about how much they share, especially when you're new to the work.
Yes.
And so a lot of the research I've really painstakingly done basically duplicate. Once I really started to build these trusting relationships, it kind of turned out to have duplicated But I think where I'm really useful, it's not so much I'm good at figuring out how folks are relating to each other, what those relationships look like, and also sort of tracking radicalization. The folks who have been on this for much longer are very good at the actual figuring out, you know, finding the evidence, finding discrete evidence and doing photo IDs and that kind of stuff.
So. Can you speak to the process of radicalization into these movements? Have you thought about how it happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of internet radicalization paths. If it's like, for folks who are boomer generation, I did a long thread, actually. It was the first thread I did that really got traction as anti-fascist research on a guy who, you know, one interesting thing with Facebook is is the likes are chronological. So you can actually like watch what was that path for a person. So for this person, and this is a pattern I saw with a lot of people, they liked the local cops, but they also liked the local African hair braiding shop that probably a friend or neighbor ran. They liked a couple local news stations. They liked the Beatles. There wasn't anything too intense. And then they liked Fox News, and then they started liking Fox News personalities. And then they started liking Breitbart and Ben Shapiro and folks like that. And then they started getting into some of the alt-right stuff and the Pepe stuff and some of the scarier 3% stuff, the more explicitly white identity stuff. You could really watch how Fox News was sort of an incubator, and then Breitbart and Shapiro were the bridge that brought people over the alt-right. And there have been, you know, the two Nazis who vandalized that synagogue out in the Midwest a little while ago. That was actually why I wrote that thread, was they specifically said Breitbart and Ben Shapiro had been their bridge into straight-up Nazism, spray-painting swastikas on the synagogue. That's how they'd gotten into that scene. So that's usually the path for older folks, and often that leads not into the Proud Boys or the alt-right necessarily, but more into 3%ers, the militia stuff, the Q stuff, a lot of times the Q stuff, QAnon, that, or just like Stormfront kind of Nazism. And then for younger folks, it's often like they get into something like often misogynist stuff. They start with misogynist stuff, like they're into Jordan Peterson or like a men's rights activist forum or, you know, that kind of, or incel stuff, that kind of stuff on Reddit. And they get those communities radicalize people. So like 4chan, Reddit is now like taking policing more seriously, but 4chan still is like a major vector for, that kind of alt-right radicalization. And like it's often like especially younger folks, they start out with like the misogynist stuff about women, and like that's the bridge into like race science and that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And often it's about availability of white women, or like, you know, a lot of like the concerns about like not getting laid and hating women because they're not getting laid dovetails really nicely with like, well, the fact that we're not getting laid is a problem because it means like the white race will die and white women should be our sex slaves. So yeah, that I think is really unique to the younger folks, but it's like misogyny is the bridge.
Okay.
Interesting.
The Proud Boys like to say they're multiracial, they'll accept gay people. What's your answer to that? That they're not really Nazis because they've got Puerto Ricans, they've got black people. What's your answer to that? They're not Nazis because they have people.
I mean, there were Jews in the Third Reich too. Like, the fact that you've got some tokens or you've made some exceptions doesn't disprove the rule.
At Charlottesville, there were a number of people who were not white on the, well, at least two that were not on the Nazis. There was a black Confederate who was standing right next to the Nazis, and there was a Puerto Rican Proud Boy who was at Charlottesville.
Yeah. I mean, especially for the newer generation of white supremacists, it's not like, they're not like the like neo-Nazis of the 70s who like openly fantasized about killing black people on sight. I mean, their analysis is really structural, and they're often like intelligent enough to know like one or two black people next to them. They don't like think of, oh, the black person will contaminate me. They're just like, well, here are our structural concerns about black people in urban populations, and we'd like to get rid of them. But if the individual black person next to them is like, yeah, we agree with that, we're just not part of that part of the black population, then the white supremacists are maybe not so much a black person. There aren't a ton of black people. I've actually never seen a black Proud Boy, but especially with like Latinx folks. If like the Latinx folks are willing to be like, yeah, undocumented immigrants are scum and they don't deserve a place in our country, and like my parents came over legally, fuck those guys, then Proud Boys tend to be fine with that.
How much do you think that this new racism is coming from sources like Amran, Jared Taylor, or David Duke, who at times has tried to downplay the violent racist image?
I mean, I think they're sort of the old guard and certainly laid the groundwork, but I think Steve Bannon is really the reason we're seeing a lot of this. I think he expertly diagnosed where white working class folks were in terms of feeling alienated, not having their needs recognized by either party, feeling disenchanted, white men especially feeling dispossessed. And he did an excellent job of taking that feeling of dispossession and turning it and weaponizing it against people of color and immigrants. I mean, that was really his project at Breitbart. That was his project helping build up alt-right right voices. And I think he's kind of an evil genius. I think he didn't do it single-handedly, but in many ways, and with like all that Mercer funding behind him, was able to like create a new kind of racist movement that was just ingenuous enough and had enough technical sophistication to really just spread like wildfire.
Yes.
And you saw stuff like Hillary and the deplorables, like people just didn't take it seriously. People didn't mainstream. I mean, the fact that it's like still seen as kind of out there to research these guys, that this isn't just like what the New York Times is publishing every day. I mean, not I'm like a New York Times caliber writer, but like the fact that this kind of research and reporting isn't a fixture of the mainstream, I think really speaks to the fact that people are still really underestimating just how sweeping this change in new kind of racism and new kind of white supremacy, but also misogyny. Like, it's a very full-throated fascism and multifaceted fascism, and that neo-Nazis are very concerned with, you know, mostly the racial, almost exclusively the racial aspect. And these guys really, they hate everybody, and they have, it's almost a dark intersectional thinking. Like, they're intersectional about their hate. They have a very specific, like, structural understanding about how these hatreds intersect and support each other.
The rally that happened this weekend, it was a so-called free speech rally. Can you speak to how big tech, Facebook cracking down on hate groups and Twitter cracking down on hate groups is having an effect on this movement?
Well, they're definitely feeling it. And I think when you look at something like the free speech rally, I mean, fascism it's basically an autoimmune disorder of democracy. It's folks within a democracy who weaponize the institutions of democracy against democracy itself. And they take down, first they use those institutions or the defenses for those institutions to destroy the institutions from within. they do their best to set up hell imitations of those institutions that they use to destroy democracy from that space. And then eventually they just get rid of those, any semblance of those institutions altogether once they've won. So using free speech and the press is like a pretty basic institution of democracy. And they're trying very hard to take this pretense about free speech that's really about deplatforming by private organizations and pretend as if it's a struggle having to do with this like institution of democracy.
Karl Popper's The Paradox of Tolerance and Intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for spending the time to speak to me. I will be publishing this in the next week or two on Vermont Movement News, which is a very new podcast, which is just getting off the ground. I will try to send you a link to this interview.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Next up is Scott Norman Rosenthal with a report back from the Washington, D.C. Defend Free Speech Rally. This interview has been edited for brevity and clarity. We have Scott Norman Rosenthal, who is present at the rally in D.C. with the Proud Boys and Gavin McInnes, the Defend Free Speech Rally. What can you tell me about the rally?
Well, as I arrived at the site, I noticed a man on a corner. He was dressed in a black T-shirt with white lettering. He was wearing sunglasses. T-shirt said something to the effect of end hatred. And I went up and I talked to him. He was talking to a group of women who, they were employees of an organization, governmental or NGO, I'm not sure, to work with people. And he was spieling about let's end hate. And after I talked to him for a minute or so, I realized he was one of the Proud Boys. He claimed that the other side, that would be myself and the people I was with, had threatened to throw acid in their faces, which I was later told in our group was one of the rumors being spread. It has variations. Sometimes it's cement in drinks, and sometimes, which doesn't make a lot of sense really, but, and sometimes it's this thing about acid. When I got a photograph of him, but when he saw me pull out my camera, he very unobtrusively turned his face away.
How many people did you get photographs of?
30 or 40 altogether. They lined up at a fence far away because once I walked away from the corner at which I had conversed with that man, I went over to where our people were gathering and the police put up barriers. Not everyone was allowed through the barriers. You needed to be in some way approved by the other side to get through, to get to their rally. I could see that there were very few spectators, but I photographed their people who came up to a barrier. I photographed anyone that was clearly with them afterwards when they were being escorted out by the police.
They basically had police escort in and out?
Yes, and the man in the sunglasses said that the Proud Boys work with the police. I got a photograph of a man. He was in real riot gear.
Police or Proud Boys or Antifa?
And he was with a bunch of police. He was there interacting with, he was one of them. Secret Service. Well, we didn't see a lot of what was going on down there because we were about a block or so away. Put it this way, by telephone, the particular lens I have with me doesn't go out very far in terms of telephoto, in terms of magnification, but I strained it to the limits to get photographs of the people who lined up, different people at different times at the barrier. There was a barrier far away from us too, which they were behind.
You were at Pershing Park?
I think we were at Pershing Park, and they were in another park a little bit over.
Freedom Plaza, yes.
Freedom Plaza, because it didn't look grassy. We were in the grassy section.
Did you see any aggression?
I don't recall seeing any actual aggression.
Were the police aggressive?
They sent some of the press who were over there with them, came over, and basically our people shut them down. They didn't want to deal with them. I photographed a couple of the people may have been indeed sincere, neutral, whose photographs I deleted maybe I shouldn't have, but they didn't look like.
Being the Proud Boys side.
Ideologic.
Do you think it was worth going to the rally?
Somehow, I think it was very important that I was there. And may I say, especially as I represent a branch of the developmentally delayed / invisible disability / neurodiverse community that is often overlooked, the people who were not even functional enough to get anywhere and or were not allowed to.
So it took you 16 or 17 hours to get to D.C. in total?
At least, probably more like 18.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Scotty. Finally, we have a discussion of footage from the actual Defend Free Speech rally in D.C. with your host and Occupy D.C. medic mom. This weekend, July 6, 2019, there was a rally in Washington, D.C. by the alt-right demanding free speech, and there was a competing counter-rally by Antifa that wants to keep fascists out of D.C. The ostensible demands of the alt-right, or the alt-light, as it was the Proud Boys, is they say the First Amendment is under attack. But if you dig just a little bit, you'll see that what they're upset about is that their people have been deplatformed. Laura Loomer, Gavin McInnes, Tommy Robinson, Roger Stone, they've all been deplatformed or demonetized for hate speech. People like to think of this in terms of the U.S. First Amendment. The First Amendment forbids the government censoring people, stopping speech. It does not apply to speech on a private platform. Like, you can't come in my house and say whatever you want. First Amendment does not stop people from kicking a fascist or someone who's lewd or obscene or just obnoxious off their platform. Now, we're going to listen a little bit to what Gavin McInnes had to say at the rally in D.C. Now, the name of the person who recorded this is Stephen Ignoramus. I don't think I need to say too much more. Stephen has said it all about himself. Now, let's listen to what McInnes had to say, and forgive us, the sound quality is not the best.
That's a new kind of headbutt I invented. The body headbutt. Never been done. You can fuck up a guy's ribs with the body headbutt. With the head headbutt, you're really just gonna break his nose at best. Body headbutt, a lot more stuff to get.
So Gavin is playing around with being violent in his very, very speech. He headbutted one of the announcers.
Check in on Copper Cab in about 2 hours. I bet he has a bruised rib. You may have noticed I'm sitting up here handcuffed, and that is a symbol of what they are doing to us, what the establishment is doing to us, what big tech is doing to us. And people sometimes differentiate between, say, Antifa and the DNC and the judges persecuting the NYC9, the Proud Boys. It's all the same.
The NYC9 were Proud Boys that got involved in a brawl, and they kicked someone on the ground and yelled anti-gay slurs at them. And Gavin's trying to make them out as being victims.
It's all the same group. They have the same funding. And they think that they can chain us. They think that they can handcuff us.
Now, of course, that's a textbook case of projection. The alt-light and alt-right do have a lot of funding. However, Antifa does not. And it is not unlike the alt-right, which has sympathizers and funders in the Republican Party and the moneyed class. Antifa does not. They don't understand the structure of the movements they are opposing. They assume that their opponent does things the same way they do.
Yes, Antifa is much more loose, and any funding tends to be provided by the individuals themselves.
You have to wonder why we're banned. Why is Laura Loomer banned? Why is Milo banned? Is it because of hate?
They've clearly incited violence against many groups of people. That's why they've been banned from these platforms.
Okay, so you hate hate, I get it. But all these people talk about is this passionate vitriol against Trump, against Trump supporters, against anyone they deem, I don't know, left of Mao. And they say punch a Nazi. And when they say punch a Nazi, they obviously mean punch a Trump supporter. So these people are brimming with hate. They don't hate hate, they love hate. They hate the Second Amendment. They hate the First Amendment. They hate guns. They hate us. They hate free speech. Okay, so what's the other reasoning? Well, the other justification...
It's kind of ridiculous that he tries to tar Antifa as being against the Second Amendment.
Justification for all the censorship is that they hate violence, and Proud Boys are violent, Trump supporters are violent. But then you have Tim Kaine saying, fight them in the streets. You have Maxine Waters say, harass them everywhere they go, harass Trump supporters. You have Eric Holder saying, when they go low, we kick them. So you like violence. I've even seen these academics come up with justifications for their violence, saying it's just violence, but our violence is bad. That's the reverse. The truth is that we don't start fights, we finish them. It's not even fun fighting them, to be honest. It feels cruel. When they came to my NYU talk, they pepper sprayed me, and a bunch of us were left to fight them. And I've heard this about in World War II, they sent so many Russians to the front that were unarmed, that after a while, killing them was bad for morale, because you're just murdering these guys with no shoes. And that's how it feels to fight Antifa after a while. You're just sort of like, oh, Jesus, that's seven.
In the past, the Proud Boys have tried to maintain plausible deniability, whether they were Nazis. Now, Gavin here is likening the group he founded to Nazis.
Directly.
I think we've heard enough from Gavin on this.
Everything that he was pointing out is demonstrably projection. Even the most violent of the Antifa, such as
ARA or
ARA and Rose City Antifa, some of these groups that perhaps do go out looking for fights, most Antifa are coming together when there's already something from the fascists going on, you know, or there's a situation where people need protecting from extreme right-wing people, the Proud Boys, various groups like that. It's to hear what Gavin is saying there, he takes it and twists it around and says, oh, they're doing it, when it's demonstrable that he's wrong.
Nazis are not just expressing an opinion. It's not free speech. They're promoting genocide. They want to get rid of people of color, or at least the people of color that don't agree with them. They want to get rid of immigrants from the South. They really don't care if they die or not. Advocating killing groups, that's genocide. Free speech does not cover a conspiracy to commit genocide. When the Patriot Prayer people come into Portland after each of their rallies, which contain a lot of Proud Boys. It's not just Proud Boys, but the Patriot Prayer draws a lot of Proud Boys. There's many more attacks against gay people, trans people, people of color. That's what we call stochastic terrorism. You can't say they're not telling their folks to go out and beat people up or kill people, though sometimes they are, they know very well that their rhetoric is going to inspire this type of action.
And there are some people who watch them and go to their rallies who believe that they're giving them, that they, Patriot Prayer or Proud Boys or these other groups, are giving them the go-ahead to take out their own aggressions on gays, various people of color. They're like, see, they're doing it, which means I can do it too. And it's been shown repeatedly where A happens, B grows out of it. In this case, A is Patriot Prayer or Proud Boy or other alt-right, alt-light get-togethers, and immediately afterwards you see a spike in violence against the very people that they keep claiming, oh, well, we don't really care for them, but we're not going to do violence. But fact is, they're inspiring people to do just that.
They excel in creating plausible deniability, do a incendiary speech against trans people or Muslims or whatever the target of the day is. And they never told people to go out and beat them up. So they could say, well, I didn't go tell them to beat them up. And Trump does this as well. He knows very well that the results of his hate speech will be violence. But groups like the Proud Boys, Gavin is no longer their leader, because after the events in New York, where they were, multiple Proud Boys were pulled up on charges, he resigned to give himself or his group plausible deniability for the violence.
I also noticed back a little bit, Gavin was speaking about everything being against Trump supporters, that is hate of Trump and hate of Trump supporters. And, well, if you've ever met Trump personally, which I have, the guy's an asshole to start with. And this was long before he ever became the pretender to the presidency. But also, it's what he and his hand-picked administration have done since. That gives people reason to hate the administration and him as the head of it. You know,
and the supporters.
And his supporters, because I'm old enough that I can look back at my father and grandfather having been in World War II. Again and again, people say the German people were just, they were just following orders, they were just caught up in it, they weren't really doing bad. Well, if you're not fighting against it, yeah, you are doing bad. Even being neutral is, that's not the way to go. Truly had to be on one side or the other, because Hitler's Nazi side was very strongly doing active genocide. Look at the Jews. Look at the Roma. Look at various Russian groups. This was active stuff. There was reason to hate them. We see this same stuff happening now. It's not as active. It's more the subtle things like the concentration camps. Historians are saying, hey, this isn't how Third Reich begins. We're well in the middle of it now.
And another thing about these rallies, who can really argue with free speech as a principle? Not many people can. The modern free speech rallies that we're having, they've become cover for people to preach Holocaust denial and hatred of Jews and Muslims. Well, it's just free speech. But even a libertarian I had a discussion with a while ago said, well, in principle, I'm all for these free speech rallies, but in reality, they just become cover for fascists to recruit. The thing about fascism is that it uses the tools of democratic societies to destroy those societies. As another interview I have done, they called fascists the autoimmune disorder of democracy, because they use the very institutions of democracy to destroy it. So I guess that's all we really have to say about the Gavin rally. We will have report back from the rally. I had a interview with a woman, Gwen Snyder, who had the Proud Boys come to her house to threaten her because she's been doing research on them. If they were such a harmless drinking fraternity, they wouldn't do this kind of behavior.
Well, I don't know about that. The number of times that guys get together and drinking and then do stupid things, it may be a guy thing, but you can't go to someone's place and threaten them or actively intimidate them without expecting some kind of consequences. And that's one thing that the whole alt-right needs to understand as well, is with free speech. The amendments have to do with what the government can do. It's not what you and I can do on our private property. As in, someone cannot come to my land and be threatening me without expecting consequences from the local police or my local friends in the gun club.
Very well said. Thank you. Well, that about wraps up this episode for the week of July 6th of Vermont Movement News. I hope you enjoyed it. You can visit our website at www.vermontmovementnews.org. We are available on Blueberry, Google Play Music, and iTunes. We hope to add other platforms soon. Thank you for listening.